What's up, guys? We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And guys, today we have a very, very special guest, a man that needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyways. Three-time. I know some people might not say three-time because one was the interim, but three-time super middleweight champion of the world and one of the most talked about fighters right now. Not to mention the youngest champion, super middleweight champion, Mr. David Benavidez.
What's up,
thank you, guys. I appreciate that. And it feels good to be here with you guys.
A Shot of Lion production.
My guy. Yo, obviously we've been watching you for a while now. You know, we've seen all the body of work that you've put in. And you're kind of the talk of the boxing world right now. You know, obviously there's the little guys, but they've always been this little guys, you know, historically, you know, they do well. And then you've got the big guys, and then you've got the guys that can transition. And you are kind of one of those guys that can transition because you're like, besides Canelo, you are the guy that everyone's talking about right now. With your style, the way that you finish fights, the way that you come to fight each and every time. It's never a boring fight. I mean, David, the body of work that you've put in has got you to that place now, but you're still chasing something. You're chasing something.
Yeah. No, yeah. So right now I'm basically chasing all four titles. You know, it's a right that I've, you know, respectfully earned. And I've been, you know, I've just been putting in a lot of work for a long, long time, bro. I'm 27 years old now. I have 10 years professional. You know what I mean? So I've just been putting in work. I've been beating the people who they needed me to beat. You know, and I've been doing everything in my power to get to that fight. But, you know, unfortunately, that fight isn't happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the things and kind of like the knock on boxing, which is the difference between what we do in the UFC and what the boxing has become is obviously there's the four titles, which, you know, for those of you who don't understand, obviously there's the WBC, there's the IBF, there's the WBA, and
IBO.
IBO? Yes.
It's IBO, right?
WBO.
And it's, you know, guys can have a piece of the title in that weight class and then just kind of hang on to that belt and not want to unify. So it makes it very, very difficult to determine who is the best in the world, who is the best super middleweight in the world when four guys have titles and they're considered world champions.
Yeah, because it's almost like this, like the belt era of the four belts came like in the middle of the 80s, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because that's when you had Hearns and you had Sugar Ray Leonard and everybody had a belt, the Four Horsemen.
Yeah,
like where do you think that changes everything? Because you know, I know he's a big UFC guy. This dude is he loves the sport of mixed martial arts. Yeah. Even before it went mainstream, I remember training with him and his brother. Like they would always watch like the WEC, UFC. But how now, David, especially and particularly in your position, the fact that, you know, let's call the pink elephant in the room. Canelo, he doesn't want to fight you.
Yeah, bro, it's a little hard, you know, just to, because obviously this is a fight that everybody wants to see. It's the biggest fight in boxing, in my opinion, right now. But it sucks when a guy, as Canelo says, that he's the king, he can do whatever he wants. He's basically holding the belts hostage.
King, you know what I mean? Yeah, of course, king or prima donna.
Yeah, basically, you know what I mean? And like I said, I did everything in my power to make this fight happen. You know, I won the interim title, I won title eliminators, and I beat the guys who they told me that I couldn't beat. So I feel like I'm in line for this fight, but the only reason that he doesn't want to fight me because he knows that it's going to be a passing of a torch. It's not going to be him with his victory in his hand raised. It's going to be him passing all the torches to me.
That's very interesting that you say that because we had a conversation early on this year with a former boxer, obviously multiple time world champion, and this subject came up is
okay. He's talking about
historically. I'm talking about speaking of Oscar De La Hoya, but historically, and I think this is something that people are so attracted to in the sports world is historically there is this thing that whether we like it or not, whether we know it or not, and it's called the passing of the guard. And the passing of the guard doesn't necessarily mean, okay, the new guy comes in and just beats the dog shit out of the old guy and the old guy's done. The passing of the torch is, you know, there's been a guy that has been put in that position to where rightfully he has earned it and he's been the top guy and he's done his job in that spot. But then it comes because time waits for no one. you know, it comes a time where it's the new guy steps up that says, I'm the new guy to carry that torch forward. And they step in, and then you have to kind of hand that over. We saw that if we want to talk about the Mexican boxing, we saw that with Julio Cesar Chavez and Oscar De La Hoya. You know, and even with that, Oscar did do a favor because Mayweather was at a point where Mayweather was, yes, he's not Mexican, but Mayweather was at that place where he was his own brand now. He was trying to build himself, but he needed that Oscar De La Hoya fight. He got it, and Mayweather became Mayweather.
Yeah.
And in turn, whether we like to believe it or not, Mayweather gave that to Canelo.
Yeah.
He didn't have to fight Canelo, but he did that. And yes, Canelo didn't get the win. So what I'm saying is, yes, that passing of the guard doesn't necessarily mean you have to get that win, but that gives you the stamp of, I'm the new guy who's going to take boxing forward. And I kind of feel like we're in a place now where there's the new guy saying, hey, I'm here. Look at me. Give me that opportunity. And do you feel like that's something that's not happening?
Yeah, I definitely do feel like that. I feel like in every sport, there's always going to be, you know, a new contender, a new hungry contender that a lot of people gravitate towards too. Also kind of like how when you beat Tyrone Woodley, you know what I mean? Because you were the guy coming up and Tyrone Woodley was a dominant champion for a long time and you went and beat the shit out of him. So I feel like with me, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? I'm preparing very hard for this fight whenever it does happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but, you know, I stay training. I stay evolving as a fighter. And I just want to give the fans, not only do I want to prove to the fans, but I want to prove to myself that I'm the best in the world. So if the fight comes, you know, good. If it doesn't, you know, it's not the end of my career. I'm going to still keep paving my way, working my way. And if he doesn't want to give me the opportunity at 168, that's why I'm going up to 175 right now. Because I'm not going to wait for nobody either. You know what I mean? I know my dreams. I know what I'm set out to do. And I know what I'm capable of doing. So this is why, you know, I said if it's not going to happen at 68, I'm going to go up to 75. This fight's going to put me at the number one contender. Oof. To fight for the WBC title. And those are going to get unified at 175. So, you know, like I said, dreams always come true. It doesn't matter if somebody else is trying to stop you. You're going to find your own way and you're going to make your dreams come true regardless. Yeah.
You know, that's partially what I love about you, David, especially you as a fighter. Like, you take on all comers. But if the fight with Canelo doesn't happen, you're looking to go up to 175 pounds and potentially get the winner out of Beterev and Bivol.
Yeah.
Which, if we all know the sport of boxing, Bivol is the one that, you know, decisively beat a guy like Canelo.
Yeah.
And I know talking to a lot of people, you have sparred with Bivol. And you sparred with I'm not sure if you sparred with Beterev.
No, I haven't sparred with him, but I sparred with Bivol.
And you were younger.
I was 22. Yeah, so I mean, I from seeing what I did to him in those sparring sessions, I'm very confident I'd win. But I'm not going to, you know, be a fool and just use confidence as 100% fuel. You know, I'm going to go in there and work extremely hard. And that's why I want to be a part of these big fights too, because as you know, both you guys know, once you get a really good fighter in front of you, the training camp is different. The mentality is different. And when you get in that ring, you shine. And that's what I want for myself. I want to be put in them hard positions. I want to be put in, you know, where you have to use 100% of your skills. And that's why I feel like the best will come out of me. So I'm not scared of it. So whatever it is, even if, you know, not light heavyweight isn't my final destination, I really want to go up to cruiserweight, you know, by the time my career is done.
And cruiserweight is what weight?
I think it's 200.
Ooh, so that's cruiserweight, just another. So you're a weight class away from going to actual heavyweight.
Yeah. But you know, we're gonna move one step at a time. We got light heavyweight, and that's a division I've been wanting to go to for a long, long time. I mean, I did my 30-day weigh-in yesterday. I only have 13 pounds left to lose. So I mean, I feel great. And
you have 13 pounds left to lose to make light heavyweight. Which is 175.
Yeah. So I'm like a month away. So I feel good. I've never felt this good. You know, I felt good, but like in weight terms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm just ready to take on this challenge.
You can easily get. Okay. We have to ask. What do you walk around when you're not?
I walk around like 200.
200.
Tamale season.
Tamale season. What is it? Burger season. Lobster. It's everything season.
Okay.
I hear you, man. Like when you see a guy like Canelo and you're thinking, okay, why doesn't Canelo want to fight me? What makes you problematic? And what brings that fear into this guy? Whether you guys want to call it the passing of the torch or the passing of the guard, what is it that makes Canelo not want to fight the Mexican monster?
I think it's just the way I fight all my every single fight. I fight. I don't fight for, to get to 12 rounds. I fight to knock everybody out. You know, to implement as much damage as possible. And there's just a variety of stuff I could do. You know, I can fight on the inside. I can fight on the outside. I'm very fast. I'm very powerful. I like to throw combinations. And if and jab, also jab is my favorite body. That's what I'm saying. I could do a lot of stuff. And if you really see the people that Canelo has trouble with are the people that throw a lot of combinations. And that's my specialty. You know what I mean? And I just want it. I feel like he knows it. He knows that how hungry I am for this fight. As much as he tries to say that I'm not, I'm this, I'm that. But he knows that I'm on his ass. And he knows that once we get in that fight, this is going to be the hardest fight he's ever been through.
Okay, so I watched your, I've seen your fight when you fought Ronald, his last name, always
Ellis.
Which gave you the title,
mm-hmm.
I believe. And, you know, an impressive fight because that fight was a, it was a back and forth, a tough fight.
Yeah.
It looked tough. I mean, even though
he was actually from Canelo's camp, his main sparring partner. Yeah.
Yeah. It looked tough, even though it looked like
Canelo a message, but hey, don't fight.
Even though it looked like, you were having fun in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, it. But you kind of started pouring it on, and clearly from that fight, we could tell that he's a great boxer, and he did a great job of boxing and mixing it up. But for you, it was just every time you would land a shot, it just seemed like the shots were more effective in the fight.
Yeah.
And obviously, we got the lopsided score. You know, one judge gave it to him, you know, 116, I think 111 or 112, something like that. But you ultimately pulled away from that. But looking at that fight and looking at the fighter that you were then compared to the fighter that you are now.
Well, you're talking about Ronald Ellis. Ronald Gouveia.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I could tell you the whole thing about this story. This fight, how it happened, it was my first title fight. I was 20 years old. So I went through a lot that fight. I think 3 weeks before my uncle had died. Really? You know what I mean? So it was my mother's brother. So I was very close to him. That really fucked me up. You know what I mean? And then having to fight 3 weeks after that, you know, this is a person I love dearly. And that was the first time I've ever gone through with like a relative dying like that. So it was very hard for me. But take nothing away from it. Ronald Ellis, Ronald Gouveia, he went and showed up. He fought a great fight. But I feel like we pulled, you know, from what I was going through in that fight, you know, and now I also got sick the week of the fight. I did the best I could and I got the victory. When we did the rematch, I don't know if you've seen the rematch. It was a completely different fight. It was the rematch because it was a close fight. You know, I gave it to him. He did really good. He won some rounds. So I said, I agreed to rematch in the back room. I'm like, we got to do it again. That fight, I won every single round. I think I only lost one round. But if you could go back and look at that one, that was really good. But what's changed for me, too, is just evolving as a fighter. You know, I think you know as well, like, just because you win a fight, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean that you have to stay in the same, learn the same thing you're doing. You evolve as a fighter because the fighters evolve as well. You're not going to get the same fighting style every single time. You're going to get something different. People are going to do different. People are going to catch up to the stuff you're doing, and you have to do different stuff. So it's just also me just being the best version of myself I could be, you know, and then just, you know, just being comfortable where I'm at. You know, that fight, I was 20 years old. Now I'm 27. I've been professional 10 years. You know, I've been through some hard fights, been through some easy fights. But I use all of that as fuel and all as experience, you know, as to where I'm going and how much better I could possibly get.
Yeah. Watching that Canelo Munguia fight. And if you notice those first couple of rounds, like Munguia, it seems like he had the right game plan, pressing him, using his straight punches. Like, I sometimes wonder, even those first couple of rounds, but then what happened with Munguia is he kind of went astray from the game plan. He went back to that Mexican style.
Yeah.
You know, what discipline do you need to have to fight a guy like Canelo in order for you to actually beat him? Like, you at the age of 27... You have the ability, obviously, and the experience to be able to fight this dude where you're maybe make him backpedal.
Yeah.
Exactly how is it that that Beterev did to Canelo? It's pretty much, all right, man, I'm not going to react to your punches. I'm sorry, Bivol. I'm going to get you kind of somewhat going backwards. And me watching the fight, I'm just thinking like, all right, man, how is it that David would actually fight him?
So if you look at the bigger guys that Canelo's fought with power, you could tell that...
He doesn't seem like a 68-pounder dude.
He doesn't. He gets pushed back by them. You know what I mean? He gets he doesn't really take the shots well like as when he took the shots against Billy Joe Saunders and Caleb Plant. So he's vulnerable for them shots. And then when Munguia was throwing more combinations, you could kind of see Canelo coming back. You know what I mean? Getting pushed back. I feel like Canelo, he's too smart of a fighter. You just try to one-shot him. You have to throw combinations and combinations and keep him on the end of the jab. And also use the ring. When Munguia messed up at, he stopped using that game plan. And he just
started pressing more.
That's when he would get caught with the body shots and the uppercuts. So, and the thing about Munguia, too, his defense is not that good.
Yeah.
So that kind of didn't do him no good either. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
he went from his gift from using his length to eventually kind of fighting inside.
Why would the taller man fight an inside?
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, especially when he was having success throwing his combinations and his jab. He should
at
just
the,
stay
at
with
the
that.
Talent of his jab or his right hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, Canelo's not that big, dude. You're 6'1", he's 5'8".
Yeah. He's small.
Yeah, he's a small 68 pounder. I mean,
I agree. He's a smaller stature. The one thing about him, though, when he does get inside the ring, he's big.
Mm-hmm.
He's big. The way he corners guys, the way he kind of breaks guys down over time, he's big.
Yeah.
Actually watching and studying him. But this is one, and I've been hearing this a lot. You know, I absolutely don't believe Canelo is scared. And I think you understand that as well. You know that. But there's something.
I disagree, but go
ahead. There's something. Because you can't be, you're not scared to be a world champion. It's I don't care if it's someone that's extremely, you know, that might be dangerous to you. But that's what we do. That's what you do. That's what you taking all these chances. You sparring with these guys since you were young. You weren't, of course, you might be a little worried on the inside. But you step in there and you spar with these guys anyways. And then you get done. You're like, oh, I didn't die.
Yeah.
You know, I'm good. So yeah. I don't believe that rhetoric. Oh, Canelo's scared. But if I understand Canelo's position. If I'm in his shoes towards the tail end of his career.
200 million, Kamaru. 200 million. Go ahead. Go ahead.
That, towards the tail end of his career. And I have a piece of paper in front of me with names on there of which guy should I pick to fight. I've got Terrence Crawford, Munguia, Caleb Plant again. Let's say Jamal Charlo, David Benavidez. I'm looking at all these names. Who do I pick?
I'm going to look this away. One, I'm going to look away.
This one, 20 million, 25 million, maybe 30 million, 35 million, 150, 200 million. But I'm at the tail end. Your name is not exactly jumping off. And especially a guy like Canelo. It's not that he needs money.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to say he doesn't need money. We all need money. I don't care how much money you have. We need money, you know. But if I had to pick, your name is not the first pick.
Yeah.
Because you pose the most problems.
Yeah.
So I understand that from his perspective, being at the tail end of his career, do I want to fight this guy? But what I don't understand and what I have a hard time with is him understanding that he is that path for you becoming the next face of boxing.
Yeah, but hold on. Before you answer that, David?
And not giving you that opportunity. Yeah. That I don't like and I don't understand.
Yeah.
Because if he does believe he's still the top, the king of boxing, then of course I would go ahead and silence all the doubts.
The biggest thing, though, that I'm going to say is under the WBC, he is the mandatory. So where is it that the sport still becomes fair and becomes clean?
We've already known that. At the end of the day, people are vacating titles so they don't have to fight certain people.
Yeah, but if that's the case, if he cannot find the mandatory, then vacate the belt. Simple.
So to be honest with you, I agree 100% to what you're saying. And I've said that in interviews before. I feel like he's getting the easiest fights first, setting up his retirement plan with me. But like I said, if... But I'm saying, if you let somebody pick the easiest fights possible, and they're making that much money, they're going to do that. It's not his job. It's the WBC's job.
True.
So that's what kind of pisses me off too. And then I had heard some stuff where the WBC said that, oh, well, they were trying to make the fight and he decided to go up to 175. Bro, I was literally here in this apartment waiting for 3-4 months to get a call. Like, hey, you know what I mean? I was getting ready the whole time and I didn't hear nothing. I said, all right, well, let me see. I'm not going to be at 168 no more. Let me go up to 175. I thought that that would be cool since I'd been the number one contender for 3 years. I thought I was going to be able to go up, come back down. But then I didn't like what I heard saying. Oh, they're saying, the WB saying that David has 10 days to decide whether he's going to stay at 175 or come back to 168. So it's like, come on, dude. Like, I've been saying, I've been fighting, winning the fights. I'm not really even complaining to you guys like that. But if you guys put this 10-day time period on me, like, what the fuck? Like, you guys think I'm not going to say nothing? Like, that's kind of disrespectful to me, to be honest with you. I mean, I've been number one contender for 3 years. People have been wanting to see this fight. You guys gave the opportunity, the WBC, to Jaime Munguia first. Now I think Berlanga might get the, you know, his number. He's a contender to fight. So it's a whole bunch of crazy shit happening.
What's Berlanga's? What's his ranking?
I don't know, but I guess they're making it mandatory. You know, I mean, I don't want to talk bad about him either. I know he's doing the best he could do. He's training hard. He's a good fighter. But like, I've been there for a long time, bro, and I've been beating the people they told me to beat. But like I said, if I'm not going to get this opportunity here, bro, I'm going to go look somewhere else. No,
of course. And I feel like you going up to 175 pounds, you fight a guy like Bivol, and you beat him. You know how bad it's going to make Canelo look?
And that's
on top of you conquering another thing. And then not just that, David, isn't finished there. The dude's going down and fighting a freaking welterweight, 147-pounder, and he wants to put a clause on you. You cannot be 20 or 30 pounds heavier when you go into the ring. Like, how much bullshit is that? So, like if you ask me, Which I disagree with Kamaru.
Yeah,
I think he's scared.
Yeah,
I straight up.
One thing I do want to say first though, the vision I have for myself is I'm gonna win this fight, then I'm gonna fight for the unified titles at 175, and then maybe we could get a catch weight 173 with me and Canelo. Winner takes all. 75-pound belts and 68-pound belts.
You could do that.
Do you think...
Shit, why not?
Okay, so... You could make 60 or 68. Yeah. You could make that.
Yeah.
So, no, I... But no, first but of all,
you,
I want to...
Did you hear what he said?
I hear what you said, but which at the end of the day is now, you know, for the WBC to go, okay, yeah, you can hand our belt away at that weight class even if you don't make the weight. You know, it just goes to show, I mean, first of all, we already know they're picking and choosing. Yeah. Because for Canelo to be able to do this, play this game, that's them. Yeah. Because as we know, the governing body, they like who they like. They like their stars. Okay, this is our face. This is what we want. So they kind of angle to that person and they play that.
They also get percentage as well.
Which
that's
is
a big part.
which is what sucks.
Yeah, it's huge.
About it. Because everybody wanna keep their cash cow.
Yeah.
But I think you're on the right track. I think you're doing everything that you need to do because I think you fought who you need to fight. There's, besides, at 168, who else is left? You fought Caleb Plant. You fought, you beat Anthony Durrell.
Yeah.
You know, you fought Demetrius Andrade. You fought everybody that they needed to be there except the one guy.
Yeah.
And if he's not willing to fight you, and if you're willing to say, you know what, I'm not sticking around here.
Yeah.
I'm going to move up. This is the one thing about what we do as fighters. The world recognizes it.
Yeah.
They see who's fighting. They see who is willing to take those chances.
Yeah.
And they know who is going to be the face.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter whether he fights you or not, whether he says yes or no. If he's willing to go out like that, knowing that he didn't fight them, you don't think boxing fans know that? They know that.
Yeah.
And I think you're doing the right thing. You go up and you beat, like Henry mentioned.
It's just that payday.
You go up and you beat Bivol. I mean, the world looks at you and they go, okay, now I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but
and that would make our fight 100 times bigger.
Right, exactly. But how frustrating, or even, you can even go to the point where it's like, how frustrating or irritating it is that he's willing to give a guy who is 20 pounds lighter than him an opportunity, and where the people really want, because if you didn't know this, Kamaru, Canelo's last fight with Munguia, he sold 520,000 pay-per-views. You know, and Mexicans, for the most part, when Mexicans fight Mexicans, it sells. But you know who they really wanted to see? You know that would really triple that number, where I believe that I could get interviewed. I believe that I can potentially, you know, be one of the top selling fights. I think you guys can do 2.2 million sales if you fight Canelo. You know, the whole prediction, why? Is because we go back to Manny Pacquiao, Mayweather. But how frustrating is that for you? The fact that he's willing to give. And I love Terrence. Yeah. And I think Terrence is, right now for me, I feel like he is pound for pound.
Yeah.
You haven't had a chance to really prove that with somebody big like Canelo to be able to say that. But right now, the fact that he's choosing a guy who's 20 pounds lighter, like,
yeah,
like where you at with that?
So to be honest with you, it's extremely frustrating. You know, I could tell you how much I'm frustrated. You guys understand me, but for the people who don't understand me, it's like you're putting in work year after year, doing the best you possibly can in line for a promotion, and you just never get the promotion. You know you've been working hard. You know that everybody recognizes the work, but you're not getting the promotion. You know, I mean, that's kind of in the seat I'm in right now. But like I said, I still try to look at the negative as a positive. You know, the more he puts this fight off, the bigger this fight gets. The more experience I'm getting, the better I'm getting. He's getting older. I'm barely coming into my prime. You know what I mean? So it's just that I just gotta stay focused.
Well put, and that's what I'm saying.
He just saw this dude grin.
That's well put, because that's something that people in the position don't necessarily think about. And that's what, whether they can believe it or not, Mayweather was very intelligent with.
Yeah.
He understood that, you know, and you would think Canelo would understand that now and understand that maybe I should get this guy out of here while he's young.
I think he's just so arrogant that he thinks that I'm not shit. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. I don't think he can say you ain't shit because.
But he tries to say it in person, and he knows to himself.
But of course he's going to, because you know it, as an alpha, as a big dog, as the face, and when you're going to downplay that guy's not that good. Yeah. He's not that good.
Yeah.
You know, but secretly, like, that motherfucker might be, you know, he might be that dude.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, for you, you're doing everything that you need to do. And so we recognize it. Just like we're here having this debate now, everyone's at home having the same debate.
Yeah.
Because if you're not just beating these guys, you're beating them and you're still making it kind of look flawless in the way that you're doing it. I think you have the right idea with the stamp of you going up, beating that guy, and then beating Bivol or Beterbiev, whoever wins that fight. I think right there, you don't necessarily even need him anymore. Because at that point, that's where he has got to decide, do I have enough in the retirement plan? Or do I want to go get that 100, 200 million before I skate out?
Yeah.
Because he's had a lot of injuries and a lot of different things, but I think the fight needs to happen on his sake. I'm looking at him. I think the fight needs to happen now rather than later.
Yeah, but I think the problem is, too, Kamaru is like what I'm afraid, because obviously I know this dude. Like, first of all, coming to this place, I gotta go through concierge. Excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
That's in level 57.
Yeah.
Can I get you a hot towel? So to me, it's like cool, but I think a fight like that changes everything. I mean, obviously Canelo, we can talk about him all damn day, but I would like to go back, man, in your last fight against Demetrius Andrade.
Yeah.
Andre, the dude is a 2-time Olympian. Amateur world champion at that time was undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just able to chop this dude
up.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I was just very excited for that fight. I mean, I feel like both you guys love the sport and you guys love training.
Yeah.
That's the fact. I know this guy trains super hard. And I know you train super hard too. So for me, when I got the call for that fight, I was like, man, I was just so excited. You know, I started training 13 weeks in advance. I always train with my strength and conditioning guys. I put hundreds of miles and I'm running for my training camp, sparring for sparring partners 13, 14, 15 rounds. So I was already ready, bro. Like I said, the better competition to get, the better I get and the more I could show to my fans. And I was just 100% ready. Since that fight with Caleb Plant, you know, that first pay-per-view fight, that just really changes everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, I'm just ready for any challenge. And whoever people think that I'm going to have trouble with, I'm not going to have trouble. Because like I always say, the training camps, the fights are won in the training camps.
Yeah. But in particularly breaking down Andre, like what was it that you saw?
I studied him a lot. I knew that he was a lefty and he throws a lot of throwaway punches. So, I mean, me just knowing that, you know, I'm just waiting for the right time. The overhand right worked perfectly. You know, I worked on that punch a lot. You know what I mean? Just body shots, just breaking them down, just being who I am. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm really comfortable with being who I am. And, you know, I'm more elusive than what people give me credit for. My defense is better. It looks like I get hit, but I really don't get hit. I brush a lot of them off. And I'm like I said, I was just ready for that fight. I was ready for that challenge.
Yeah. No, I remember watching that fight because Demetrius Andrade, he does actually train down here sometimes too.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that fight. Yes, he was a smaller man coming up, but that goes to attest to just kind of some of the things that basically what we're talking about now. You're in a spot to where you're in line for a promotion.
Yeah.
And this man is kind of, you know, standing in your way of you getting that promotion. And kind of the same way with Demetrius Andrade.
Yeah.
Because that was his biggest payday, mm-hmm. which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
But you gave him that shot.
Yeah.
And you gave him that ability to get that payday.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's kind of time to maybe someone, you know, return the favor, yeah. you know, give my man a shot. But it's something that's still evading. But
yeah.
The one thing that I want to ask you is just looking at the landscape of boxing right now, you know, because we are on pound for pound. Looking at everybody right now, how are you ranking the top five, pound for pound?
Top five. So I have two of them that are fighting this weekend. It's Tyson Fury and Usyk. Those guys are...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You got them pound for pound.
Whoever wins that fight is going to be on the pound for pound.
Okay, top five. It's going to be the top five. All right, whoever loses is going to slide out.
And by the way, I got Usyk on that.
It's going to be a good fight.
Goes to the body. He's shorter.
His angles, just the way he boxes is art.
Olympic champ. Yeah.
So I think... In a way, you definitely got to put Canelo up there.
Put him at five?
Put him at six.
For dodging?
Put him at nine.
Watch Canelo pop up on the enemy.
You know, it's crazy. I like Canelo, but I don't like the fact that he's kind of doing the same thing that... Because they're all with Al Haymon. And what they do is they'll fucking stretch that dollar, dude, until the piggy bank breaks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But as of the pound for pound, Terrence Crawford.
So you got Terrence Crawford on there. You've got winner of Usyk and
Fury. In a way.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. You got Canelo. And then you've got
Japanese, right there.
In a way that the Japanese you.
No, I think that was number four.
That was number four?
Yeah. So the fifth one is probably
Gervonta?
It's for Gervonta. I think so.
All right, now put him one through five.
No, I don't want to do that.
Come on.
So just put
okay, my opinion, I think number one is Inoue. Number two is Usyk. Three is Gervonta Davis. Four is Canelo. And five, who did I say?
Crawford.
No. Crawford is four. Canelo's five. Canelo's five.
Okay. Okay. Now, where do you put yourself in there?
To be honest with you,
top 10.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't think I've done enough to reach the pound for pound. I think I'm a boxing fan at heart, and I respect the titles. And until I become world champion again or unify some champions, I don't really believe I deserve to be on that list. Obviously, I've had great fights, and I'm the next one that's going to be on that list. But I don't want anything given to me. I want to earn it.
Oh, I like that. I like that. See, it's one thing that I like is self-awareness and you just being humble with yourself, even though you know you that dude, because you got to know you that dude, because you got to have that confidence. No one steps in there and just going, I don't know if I might get him.
Yeah.
You know, you got to know that you were that dude.
Yeah.
But it's something about it, knowing that you were that dude, but with the humbleness behind it. This is the thing too. I hate when people do this to us, when people go, be humble.
Yeah.
Don't tell me to be humble.
Yeah.
I know what humble is.
Yeah.
You know, when people, I feel like it's when people tell you to be humble, hey, be humble.
Yeah.
It's them almost kind of saying, don't get too big to where I don't have access to you.
No, anymore. I can, for me.
You think I'm humble? Come on.
What?
Think I'm humble?
For me, it's just respecting the boxing, the ranks, the world titles, all the great champions have came. Roberto Duran, Oscar De La Hoya, Marc Antonio Barrera, Roy Jones. You know, these guys, when they were on the pound-for-pound list, they were unified or, you know, I'd beat somebody or beat three or four or five somebodies. You know what I mean? So it's just a respect for the sport. And I think that it's not only about being humble. It's about making me hungrier and wanting to be on that list. So by the time I get there, I know I'm going to earn it for sure.
Yeah. I think with you, David, because I've known David, we used to spar, by the way, back when he was
12.
I'm 10 years older.
You keep saying that we used to spar.
Hell yeah.
So let's be honest here.
Youngest super middleweight of all time. We used to spar.
Hey, I remember this dude cracked me with the right hand. Yeah, bro. He was like fucking 20 something. I was 12.
Got him.
Stop saying that.
Got him.
Wait, you were in your 20s? In your 20s? No. He was 12?
He was 21. I think he was 11, about to turn 12. Dude.
Yo, you know how many times Henry does, hey, I spar
with this 11. You're like, what? He's 11? But David. No. But check this out.
He didn't beat me up. He didn't beat me up.
But check this out. Check this out. With David.
Yeah.
David, you spar with guys like Kelly Pavlik when you were 15?
Yeah.
14, 15? Yeah, Golovkin at 15.
I sparred all those guys, all the world champions. I think the first world champion I sparred was Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen, Latif Coyote. Then I sparred...
how old? What's the youngest you've...
14. Let me tell you a crazy story.
This is a grown-ass man.
Quillen at 14? Damn.
So... I had my brother when he went. So we're from Phoenix, Arizona, right? We grew up there. My brother, after he won Golden Gloves, he went to go train with Freddie Roach, my father. My parents were divorced. So I stayed with my mom. And I've always been a big kid at the time. I was 170. A year went by, a year and a half of no training. I already love eating. You know what I mean? One day I'm looking at myself in the mirror and, bro, I was like 260. I didn't recognize myself. That's how scared I got. I looked at myself in the mirror. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I don't even know who the fuck I am. Like, I made the decision to myself. I'm like, either I do something about it or I keep going this way and I'm going to be obese and I'm going to be like my 600 pound life. You know what I mean? The people you see.
Yeah,
and that really scared me.
Yeah.
So I said, fuck it. Let's go. You know what I mean? I think I was 12, taking 2 years off. So I still had 9 years boxing. I went to Wild Card with my dad and we were training. And my dad always told everybody, because my brother, he was super talented. He was the next Oscar De La Hoya. But then my dad and my brother would tell everybody, like, oh, wait until you see David. That's really the talented one. I get there, I'm 260. Like, this is a fucking guy that you said that was talented, that was better than his brother.
Yeah.
And everybody would laugh at me. So I kind of use that as fuel for me. That turned me into the boxer I am, because I would walk in, everybody would laugh at me. I'd get in the ring and spar the biggest guy, the best, and I'd put hands on him. And nobody would say shit to me. Nobody laughed to me. They'd be like, oh, we see the reason why you think he's the next one. So from there, I sparred Peter Quillen, Latif Coyote. Then I turned 15, I sparred Kelly Pavlik, and we had great sparring sessions. And then we went to Big Bear. My brother was getting ready for a camp. And this was before Golovkin made his U.S. debut, so nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
My dad asked Abel Sanchez, like, hey, do you guys have somebody to spar my son, the other one? And I was 15 at the time. He's like, yeah, we have him. He just came in from Kazakhstan. And we look at him like, damn, this dude looks legit.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. And my dad's like, yeah, yo, we'll spar him.
Y'all
see
him hitting the bag?
Yeah.
Fucking 15. 15 against Triple G.
I'm like, shit. And this dude, before we got in the ring to spar, he gave me the fucking coldest look I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah?
Like, he really scared me, but I'm like, fuck it. My dad believes I could go in there and hold my own. Let's get it. I don't care. We're having a great fucking sparring session, bro. I think it was the last round. We both throw a left hook to the body. We both catch each other. I hear him go, ugh! And obviously I went, ugh! So we backed up. And that was our first great sparring session.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. We heard each other and then we backed up and we got each other's respect. And then I became his main sparring partner for, fuck, I think like 4 or 5 camps.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So really, I had no idea. I knew you had Spartan, but not like that. So you have a little, you know, the game plan is so experience with the guy that has been head to head with the guy.
I feel like with him, he really gave me my style today, because with him, everything I learned from him, I had to be the max. My reflexes had to be this good. My speed had to be this good. My footwork had to be this good. Everything was on point with him. You couldn't make no mistakes. And that's what led me to be the fighter I am today. Because with him, I had to be on point. There were not sparring sessions. We were both trying to knock each other out. We had some good fucking... I caught him. He caught me.
Damn.
So that's why I know that gave me so much confidence. Even to this day, too, I feel like I've seen the best fighters in sparring. I know sparring is different, but sometimes when you have your way in the sparring session every single time,
you know
what you could do.
Yeah.
So I was just And then big shout out to Golovkin, bro. I really look at him as a role model because he was the nicest guy, the humblest guy. But when that motherfucker went into the work, it was time to work. He chopped shit down.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked at him and I'm like, you know what? That's kind of like the person I want to be. That's somebody I look up to. Not only in the ring, but outside.
All right, guys. Fantastic interview so far with our guy, Mr. David Benavidez. Real quick, want to take a quick break, and we want to give a big shout out to our partners at Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Playing their pick'em game is as simple as selecting higher or lower on player stats like significant strikes and takedowns. Underdog has one of the biggest offerings in the MMA game, and you can win up to 100 times your money. They also have picks for every other major sports like NBA and NHL playoff. Underdog is available in 30 plus states like California, Texas, Arizona, and of course, Florida. These are our picks for the UFC fight night this weekend, Cannoneer versus Imavov in Louisville, Kentucky. It's definitely going to be a great follow-up to UFC 302. So don't miss any of the action.
Right now, new users to Underdog will receive up to $250 in bonus cash for their first deposit and a pick'em special when you use code P4P when you sign up. Support the show. Click the link down below in the description to get started. Thank you to Underdog Fantasy for supporting the show. Now let's get back to our interview with the one and only the Mexican monster, David Benavidez.
Well, let's talk about just the relationship with your dad, and of course you guys are a fighting family.
Yeah.
How is that? To where your dad's bragging about you, and you've been with mom.
Yeah.
And now you come over, you know, you're a little thick, you know,
delicious.
Talk about the relationship with your dad to where, you know, how that goes with, okay, I'm deciding to change my life, dad. I know you can help get this on track. How is that relationship from then? And how is that relationship now?
So I can start it now. From now on, my dad, he means everything to me. If it wasn't for my dad, I would not be in this position. And I give him credit 1,000% because I've tried to quit a lot of times. He never let me. And so back then, bro, my dad, he was a savage, bro. He was just nothing but training. He was training, and if I don't train, I get disciplined. You know what I mean? So I was really scared of my dad for a long time. But, you know, that fear implemented me to be train as hard as I can. I was like a soldier. I was more scared of my dad if I didn't train than as opposed if I would train 4 or 5 hours. So just being with my dad, he gave me such a great work ethic. And, you know, sometimes, bro, you need to learn the hard way so you could really learn something, especially in combat sports.
Yeah.
I'd rather get slapped by my dad make me cry than me getting knocked out in the ring. And that's how I grew up. You know, if I didn't do something right, my dad slapped the shit out of me. Boom, boom, boom. But that really, I tell my dad all the time, like, you know what? I appreciate you for all the spankings that you gave me when I was a little kid. You probably should have did it a little bit more. You know what I mean? Yeah. But because that turned me into who I am today. You know what I mean? It really made me get a work ethic that not a lot of kids had. And also, too, like, you got to think about it. At the time, I thought my dad hated me because I was always training. I only wanted to be a kid. But now I think about it, bro. If you sacrifice your childhood to something bigger than you, now I'm blessed with something that I could take care of my whole family with for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I could teach it to my kids. Yeah. So my dad, bro, like I'm saying, I have so much respect for him. I'm so happy that he always had this vision for us.
Yeah.
I didn't, at the time, if I'm being completely honest, I didn't believe it for myself, bro, because it seemed too far out there.
Yeah.
It seemed so hard. But I told myself that if I put 100% into it, if I fell, fuck it. But if I really know for myself that I put 100% into this and I gave it my all, and if it's not for me, it's not for me. But now, looking now, everything is going pretty good for me. And I'm just very happy that my dad never gave up on me and I never gave up on myself.
Yeah, no, and not just that, Kamaru, but his dad, you know, born in Mexico, you know, lived a lot of his teenage years in Mexico. And just the way that he found boxing, dude. I mean, he was a kid that went through famine. Like, he'll tell you that. It was to the point where, you know, like, he would fucking eat adobe, like actual dirt, to fucking get full. You know what I'm saying? From his growling stomach, like shit like that. And I've had a chance to witness and see the way how your dad was it, how he was with you guys. Yeah. You know, we'd be in New York and he'd be out there with me. He's like, boom, he'd call. He's like, hey, get David, drop him off at 19th Avenue. Make sure he goes all the way to the gym. And let me know how long it takes him to get there. I'm like, fuck.
My dad used to drop me off at the fucking freeways and make me run the whole way.
He was just like, and it was just like every day consistent. You're talking about it. Dad didn't give a fuck.
At what point, because it comes that time to where you're like, hey.
You've had enough.
Hey.
It came probably when I was like 18. I mean, now my dad knows, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, with father, son, you had a lot of like, you know, turmoil. But now my dad knows like, you know, I'm a man now. I like to do things my own way. As long as I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, my dad gives me the respect and lets me do anything I want to do. But don't get it twisted. We have to work. We have to work as hard as we can. We have to run, strength and conditioning. And since I never really had a problem with training, you know, everything is good. But before, when my dad, he didn't want to really let me off the hook. You know what I mean? So we went through our little stages, like our little fights. But, you know, it's normal for every father and son. I think now that my dad, you know, I'm a grown man and, you know, I'm not going to let him down ever, him or my family down. And he has trusted me. So he lets me do my camp however I want to do. And
yeah,
that's how it is. Yeah. And I've just become my own man.
And I think in particularly now, like I could see he's a little different. I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to train with him tonight.
He was a savage.
You know what I'm saying? With age, you know, that's the thing. Yeah. You mellow with age.
But now, David, obviously you have your wife.
Yeah.
You have your kid, Anthony. Like how much has your life changed? And how much do you view the world now, and particularly the way you were raised and now, and how are you as a father now?
Yeah. So to be honest with you, bro, first of all, for everything, you just have to be extremely grateful for everything. I feel like if you're grateful for anything, for everything that's happened to you, even the good and the bad, God will continue to bless you. You know what I mean? And right now I just try to live in complete happiness. You know, happy with everything, training with my son. You know, he's going to be the next world champion. And I'm putting it in his head now. I'm telling him, I'm in Spanish, like, papi, tú vas a ser el campeón del futuro. Like, you're going to be the world champion of the future. And he's like, all right, when Henry was outside right now, I'm like, hey, show him some combinations. And just like that, he jumps in the character. So,
he does a noise and shit.
Doing his little head movement, you know what I mean? And he's only 3 years old, you know what I mean? So I feel like our family, we're a family of boxers. This is never going to change. You know, that's something I want to hold with our family, our Benavides name. I think for generations, it's going to be known for boxing. And that's what I want to pass down to my kids and hopefully my grandkids when that time comes.
And your brother.
And my brother.
Your older brother.
Yeah.
Was obviously the top dog for a long time. Mm-hmm. And at what point did it get to where it was like, oh, David's.
Yeah. So it got to that point. My brother, we went through a lot of stuff, bro. You know, he was always dealing with injuries and he would mess up his hands and then you'd take him out for a year, another year. So, and then he had ended up getting shot in his leg and that kind of like really messed him up. You know what I mean? And then too, I think it's just from him training so long, he had like almost 300 amateur fights. Yeah. It was working a lot.
It was kind of like a love-hate relationship with him. You know what I'm saying? Like he had it like that, but so talented.
And then you could just imagine like, you know, you have all this shit happen to you, bro. And then he got shot. And then, you know what I mean? Just now he's training more, you know, he's getting into fights. He just had a great fight with Charlo. You know, it was a tough fight. A lot of people thought that, you know, it was going to be that Charlo was going to win easy. But my brother gave him a hell of a fight.
And he has an upcoming fight, right?
He's training right now. He has no upcoming fight. But you know what I mean? I'm just, for my brother too, I give a big shout out to him, a lot of respect to him because my brother's the only reason I started boxing. I always wanted to be like my brother. You know what I mean? And my brother's the one that started everything. He put the foot, opened the doors for me. And, you know, I just always want to make my family proud, my brother proud. And I just, with him, I don't think I would have been the person I am today. Without him, I wouldn't have been the person I am today.
Yeah, and is he here as well?
No, he's in Seattle.
Seattle.
Seattle, yeah.
See what? So you've moved now. If you've moved from Phoenix to Seattle.
Yeah.
Where you were? How long were you in Seattle?
So I was there for 5 years. But I actually, when I moved out of Phoenix when I was like 15,
really?
Then went back to 17, and then I went to I was in Phoenix 13, went to California for like 4 years, came back to Phoenix, then went to Oregon. Then I went to Las Vegas, then to Seattle, and now I'm here in Miami.
on here. Yeah. Damn, and David, you've gone through a hell of a freaking ride, man. But yeah. I do gotta ask you, dude, because I'm starting to get hungry. What's that donut? What's that donut on your neck, dude?
So this is like, I can't really explain it right now, but this is like a sacred geometry pattern, and then it's mixed. It's called a torus.
Yeah.
And then it's like a wrapped in copper. So this is like for like more metaphysical, more spiritual stuff. Yeah. I can't really explain it, you know, because I'm not, I don't know it 100%.
Have you been dabbling a little bit with psychedelics? I've been, then?
No. No.
I can just tell you that stuff is good, man.
Yeah.
It'll just expand the horizon of whatever the hell you're thinking. It'll give you a whole nother.
So there was this one thing I did try. It's called blue lotus flower. It comes from the Egyptians. You can make that in tea, and then you go like in meditations. It takes you really deep into meditation. Really? I'm a big meditator. I pray a lot, and I love sacred geometry. I like the old ancient history, like the Egyptian history.
What do you mean by
sacred geometry? They're like patterns. They're patterns.
Is that like off of Doctor Strange? You know,
so how like the at, lady so was? Like when you look at Ooh, stuff I'm, when you I'm look at you. When you look at stuff at the molecular level, like through a microscope. There's patterns there in everything. There's a pattern called the flower of life, which is this. It's actually in our back. If you look, I forget what spot, but in the back, you look at it, it's there. Yeah. And these are crazy. Like, this is stuff from like ancient Egyptian times.
And the thing you just showed me right now.
So this is how it looks. It's like a flower. So all these are basically circles, but they intertwine and they make a flower. It's some really deep stuff, bro. I can't explain it to you 100% because I don't want to get something wrong. And you know what I mean? Yeah, no, but if you get into it, get into sacred geometry, numerology, astrology, all that stuff is really interesting.
Really? Really? No way.
It's because, like, you think about it, bro. Sometimes I think about stuff, like, I feel like...
So talk to me a little bit about numerology. I'm kind of curious.
I don't want to explain it because I don't want to get stuff wrong. Yeah. It's deep, bro.
I was listening to a guy...
That's important.
...that was talking about numerology. And he's a guy that kids have named their kids after him. It's not like he's not like starting a cult or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But people that have had like a certain amount of, or the wife wasn't able to get pregnant, dude. Mm-hmm. And he's able to say, all right, man, when's your birthday? He's able to just come up with this whole thing as, hey, if you guys do it on this day, you guys take the test on this day, and I promise you will be pregnant.
So there's certain days, like lucky days, like 7, 9. It gets really deep, bro. I wish I could explain it to you more, but I really can't. I've been trying to do my own research, so before I try to explain it to other people, I'm trying to figure it out first.
You dabble into that, Kush?
But it's cool, bro.
It's not so much that I dabble into it. It's kind of when we had the question of, I've been asked this, I've had this discussion a lot of times where they're like, oh, do you think there's anything out there? Is there aliens? And I'm just like, for me to sit here and think that, okay, we're just this species on this one planet, in this solar system, in this galaxy, and there's many of galaxies. First of all, we can't even get to that next planet or the next one. How can I sit here and say, and especially like Doctor Strange, I seen that and it freaked me out because, you know, that my connection to that and wanting to open my mind and all of these things, it's all part of this spiritual realm to where I feel like you have to have when you, because you becoming pound for pound, you becoming champion, that exists in your head first. That kind of lives in your head a little bit first. And nobody knows it. No, everyone's like, I'm sure a lot of people probably laughed and said, oh, this thick kid, oh, he ain't gonna do nothing. He can't be that. He can't do this. Yeah. He can't do that. But you believe it in your head, and then you turn that into reality.
Yeah.
And so your spiritual connection to whatever you believe in, that's something that's very, very powerful and very, very real. And I think I am very spiritual when it comes to that. Yeah. And I can see that you are very spiritual as well. Yeah. Because, right now you're just boxing, but I think you have a bright future. You can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, you speak very, very well. To where we see that with a lot of boxers who don't get out, you know, at the right time, to where they kind of have trouble with that later on.
Yeah.
You know, you speak well, you're you know, no homo, you're a good looking dude. I can't say that anymore. Pause. Diddy. I don't know what the cool kids are saying now, but you know, you have, I think you have a bright future to do many, many things, but not just the sport of boxing.
Yeah.
But right now, it's hard to deny that it is your time
in
the sport of boxing.
Yeah.
And I think you're taking it very, very well. And I think you're going to be a hell of a champion. By the time you're done with your body of work, I think we're going to look back and say, oh yeah, he was special.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say something else on the spiritual side. So the thing I want to tell people too is some good advice. You know, we're all put here to be human beings at the end of the day. You should treat people how you would want to get 1,000%. Treated. I treat everybody I meet, bro. If the vibe is right, I treat him like a brother. You know what I mean? This guy's been my brother. You seem like a really cool dude. So I feel like we're going to have that relationship too. But if you just live by the universal rules, just being a good person, helping out others when you can. And also, you know, just doing the right thing. You know, just being the best version of yourself you could be. I feel like that helps you, you know, gain good energy, good karma from the universe. So for me, you know, I train as hard as I can, you know, but I also pray to God every day and I tell him, you know, just help me be the best version of myself I could be. Help me reach my divine self. And when you put things in God's hands, bro, you see miracles get created. Miracles get put in front of you, bro. There's been stuff that's happened to me and I'm just like, I don't know, understand how it happens. You know what I mean? But it happens in my favor, and I feel like it's because how I've been as a person, how I treat people, and I really think the universe is watching and everything. When you need that miracle to happen, if everything has been in play and you've been acting good, you've been in line with the universe is going to bless you back.
Yeah. No, I agree for sure. Henry, I know you with the psychedelics now. So
I like it, dude. I think if you ever decide to do that, David, and I know, you know, Uncle Mike, Mike Tyson.
This guy.
Rolling around in the forest?
We're still supposed to deal with De La Hoya. Yeah. You know? De La Hoya's been punking out. He's been bitching out lately. But,
I do want to do that, but I feel like I want to do it when I'm done with my career. I think I even heard Wilder said that, oh, they took the killer instinct away from me.
Really?
The one, his last fight, when he fought Joseph Parker.
Yeah.
But it's different for everybody.
That's what I'm...
Yeah, you don't want to get rid of that? it's just different, dude. Like, it probably speaks to people different.
Yeah.
Like Mike is different. Like for me, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything that you're talking about with numerology... you know, everything that we've spoken about today, but it'll really just, you know, bring out that biggest insecurity that you probably have or that you probably don't know you have, and how you're able to, maybe if there's baggage that you feel like you got to forgive somebody, like you're able to just let shit go.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not here to start a cult. I'm just saying, I'm just curious because, fuck, dude, I've known you since you're a kid, dude.
I'm going to feel bad about all the people I beat up. I'm going to have to call them like, brother. I ain't mean to do that to you, brother. I'm sorry, man.
I'm going to send you that extra bread. Hey, David, but before we go, dude, I do want to bring somebody here. I want to bring Jose Benavides Sr. Llegale, papá. Llegale, papi.
Yeah, like I said, no, thank you so much, guys, for bringing me in. Really appreciate it. You know, this is a very special moment. You know, here looking at the beach there and all these buildings, man, it's a dream come true, actually. You know, I never in my dreams would imagine that David would get this high. Don't get me wrong, I always believed in him and I knew he could do big things, but all this to me is like super incredible, unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always crazy when things start to come to fruition because, and as a father myself, my daughter told me a couple years ago that she wanted to play tennis and that she wanted to be, you know, champion and be like Serena and Venus. And of course, and I would say that to her, okay, how many titles you gonna win? And I'm sure like you were doing with him, oh, you're gonna be world champion. You're gonna be world champion. And at that point, you might not necessarily see it. You're like, I can't do that. That's impossible. You're thinking in your head, I can't get there. But yeah, by you planting that seed, you know, I think it's always surreal to when you sit and you start to look out and you're like, yo, I was saying it then, but damn, I didn't think this was going to be real. I didn't think it was going to come true. And I think right now you guys are on the cusp of pulling up, each one of y'all pulling up in the red, yellow, blue Lamborghini and the Rolls Royce. And y'all, David, you good? You good? Yeah, I'm good, Pops. I think you guys are on the cusp of that. So I just want to say, obviously, you know, first of all, thank you for even guiding him and leading him to the point now to where we can enjoy and be entertained by everything that he is doing right now, because I do truly believe he's on the cusp of that. And I mean, as you can attest,
Yeah, I know for sure, man. You know, right now with this interview, it makes it so special to be here with Henry. You know, to be honest with you, I never really said this before to nobody. Right now, you know, having Henry, or I don't know, it's just timing and all that, you know. The only thing I remember him, you know, being little, having like the toughest training in life, you know, since he was born. He had no childhood. And then, you know, what I remember now, you know, his red sweater, big. You know, to me, all those things come to me right now, you know.
Yeah.
All the sacrifices, and he had to go through hell, to be honest with you, you know. He's a monster. I made a monster, you know.
Jose, how much, like, obviously, because I was there, and I was just telling him the story when we're in New York, and you'd be like, you know, you call your brother, you call somebody at the gym, and you'd be like, hey, man, drop these dudes off and make sure they get to the gym. Like, you got to run to the gym before you actually start practice. When did you feel like, all right, man, me as a father, not, because as we know, in boxing, Sugar Shane Mosley and his father, they've bumped heads, they split. A lot of, you hear it in boxing quite a bit. When did you kind of start to allow, because it seems like to me that you've allowed kind of Junior now and kind of David, like, become like one of their own. Like, when did you feel like you had to make that transition? Because you didn't just as
First of all, you know, I got to thank all these people for going through all that. So I cannot go through that. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a lot of respect for Danny Garcia's dad, the Ghost Guerrero, Sugar Shane Mosley. And I know exactly what happened with all of them. Teofimo Lopez now, you know, all these guys, you know. I really studied what they did, you know. You know, they were too hard on their kids, you know? So I had to do something different. I had to let David, and we just talked about like about a week too, you know? I'm happy, man, you know, that you're taking over, man. You know, I've been doing this all this time, you know? Taking care of all the securities, the tickets, the flights, and all that, and the training, and the people that you want around. I want you to start feeling comfortable who you want. You know, and that, I feel that he's ready to do that step, you know. And these guys, the other guys, I'm not saying that they did it, but they had to do something wrong, you know. I think they never let go of, to me, he's still my kid, bro. He's still, you know, he's going to fall. I want to get him up, you know. I everything, you know. I'm always,
yeah.
But I have to relax.
Yeah.
I have to let him make his mistakes and, from that, you know, and he's made a lot of mistakes, but now.
No, I haven't.
So now I think that was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
So he could get better. So, you know, and he's going to still make a lot of fucking mistakes. I'm there with him. Yeah, I don't care.
See, mistakes are just kind of like the actions that don't go the way you want necessarily.
Yeah, just missing the target.
But it's.
Learning.
They're the best experience that teaches you, okay, I went left this time. All right. Go right next time.
I wanted to show you guys something. This was me. This was my first interview. This was when I was like.
Red sweater? The red sweater?
That's around the time that's how I remember.
Watch, they're going to show me full body right now.
was that Junior's debut?
That was the second pro fight. Okay.
That's his brother, dude.
So it's even just like surreal, just like me thinking about being in my brother's back rooms for his fight. Bro, it's been a wild experience. It's been a wild ride, but like I'm very happy with everything. I would never change anything. Everything's the way everything happened. Even the bad times are perfect. You know what I mean? So,
you know, for me, man, I lived with a lot of guilt for a long time. Finally, I cry, I let it go. You know, it still hits me sometimes, you know, but thank God little by little is going because they had no childhood, man. I always treat them like warriors, animals, you know, monsters, you know.
Yeah, see, that's I want to speak a little bit about that. Is it's now as a father's understanding of where that balance is because part of what you did, because you kind of kept them, you know, in a certain way. Okay, you know, they didn't have too much of that to where now they're above the rest of. You know, I guess normal. They're not normal. You're not normal. You're in the 0.1%, you know, to where they're in that 0.1%. But at the same time, let's say we flip that and we give a childhood, do you get to that 0.1%? You know, so, but you're in a place now of enlightenment to where you can kind of see and say, okay, maybe I could have been a little bit more of balance. But like we said, experience is the best teacher. Now you know how to pour into him. Well, he has a little one coming up. Yeah. Now you know how to tell him, hey, son, let him be a son. Let him be a little kid right now. You know, let him play a little bit more. Not, you know, now I'm not going to do like you. You run your ass to the gym, you know. Yeah, but let him, you know what? You know what? You know, drive him to the gym.
You know what?
Nah,
you know what? You know what? I, to be honest with you, I felt very guilty. I was like, fuck, man. But when they did it, I felt comfortable. I felt, fuck yeah, good.
It's just, that's what it is, too. I wouldn't change nothing at all. I wouldn't change nothing. I wouldn't, if I could go back in time, I would make my childhood even harder, to be honest with you. Because it really brought me to where I'm at now.
Okay, but now you got a junior. You got a little one coming up.
Yeah.
Are you going to run through that same cycle? No.
And that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like the Serena sisters, you know, they went through a lot. Michael Jackson, Selena, all these people went through a lot, bro.
But and that's the thing, though, you have to understand. And that's what one day I want to get them all down to where I have to ask them this exact same question. Do you change that? Do you sacrifice that?
You don't.
Their greatness, do you sacrifice that for the childhood? Because you're a child for a certain, just a short period of time. But what you accomplish, you have to live with for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So what do you sacrifice? Do you change that?
I will not change anything, like I said. You know, my kids, you know, I have the pattern. I have the what's it called? I have the blueprint, you know? So now it worked. You know, in the process, it kind of like...
It worked, but you know what to take out and what not to take out now. You know, okay, maybe I don't make him run to the... Maybe I drive him to the gym. But I don't make him run all the way to the gym, right? So now you can kind of say, okay, I got the blueprint.
I would still do it. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, I would still do it because at the end of the day, I look at this way, right? You love your kids so much because you went through hard times. You know, you want to give them everything. You don't want to suffer. How are they going to appreciate if they don't suffer? You know, in my opinion, that's what it is. You know, I have my sons, you know, and, you know, thank God I made a lot of money through David. I made a lot. Thank God I'm set. I can retire tomorrow and live a happy life because I invested in good things, you know. I have good properties and all that. And these guys, I can buy whatever they want. But you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let them work for it, you know? Because then I would make it easier for them. That's my thinking, you know? So I want them to struggle. I have my daughter, you know? I know she's struggling, you know? But I go there and help her a little bit. But you know what? I tell her, you know what? You did this because for you. You didn't do it because David or me or nobody. You're doing it through you. You're working hard and you're making those sacrifices and she's getting better and she's getting more mature. You know, it's easy for me to just buy things that she needs.
Yeah.
But really, I will be messing her up.
There's understanding of that value, the values and implementing those. So, I mean, I think you did we think you did a phenomenal job because right now, look where we're sitting, you know, talking to you, getting to know you a little bit better. And, you know, we look and we got almost a 180 view out here looking at the water.
Would you like a hot towel?
You've done a fantastic job. I mean, David, you are, you obviously, you know, these belts speak for themselves of what you've done. And you are truly on the cusp of really getting that, as they like to call in UFC, red panty night. You are truly on the cusp of that. So,
thank you.
You know, my man, I we're watching you. We've been watching you. We're going to continue to watch you. We love everything you've done. And we're, you know, my eyes are glued to the TV waiting to see what you're going to do next. And so we want to say thank you for letting us in your home. Thank you for giving us your time. You know, I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And I just want to—I want to tell every Henry and Kumar. You know, it's been a pleasure sitting with two living legends,
yeah,
UFC Hall of Famers. You know, I've been followed this guy, and I've followed you for a long, long time too. So, thank you so much for this.
You know what, guys? You know what? Before we leave, I want to get one more soundbite off of your dad. What message do you got for Canelo Alvarez?
You know, I mean,
and I want you to look into that damn camera. No,
you
right
know, a
there.
Lot of people say, you know, like you were saying, he's not scared. He has to be scared because he will lose everything he's worked so hard for it. To pass it over to David, if he's not scared, tell me what it is. $200 million and he'll fight him tomorrow. So I think he is scared. You know, the Mexican monster is there. He's scared of monsters.
He's coming.
It's coming.
What about you, Dave? You got any last message for Canelo, dude?
Man, he knows what it is, man. I just feel like if he's really confident in his skills, let's put his skills to the test and let's let the whole world watch it. And the winner take all.
Damn.
Well, you heard it here. David Jose Benavidez. Pleasure. Thank you. And we are out.
Woo!